Marriage Today presents The Secret of Paradise.
This first message is called The Secret of Paradise. Now, and the reason it's called Our Secret Paradise is God created Adam and Eve in Eden, and Eden's a paradise. And the word Eden means pleasure and delight. And so God didn't create marriage to be painful. He created marriage to be pleasurable, and He created it in a paradise. And so when we're married properly, we experience the blessing of paradise, all the blessing that God intended, because marriage still works. God designed it that way. And so let me talk about paradise for just a minute. If you go into a place that we would consider to be a paradise, you want it to be beautiful, obviously. You want there to be abundance. You also want there to be pleasure, you know, beaches and water and all the pleasurable things. But the most important ingredient in a paradise is peace. You would never want to go to a war zone to take vacation. You would never want to go into a paradise that didn't have peace, even if it was a beautiful place and had everything else. And so peace is what makes marriage pleasurable. Peace is the prize of marriage. We don't want to have a relationship where there's stress, anxiety, fighting, conflict, and things like that. When Karen and I got married, we loved each other, as much as we could at 19 years old. We truly loved each other, but we were very ignorant concerning marriage. And we fought all the time. I was a bad husband. I was verbally abusive. I didn't know anything about being married. I didn't know anything about women. I was a divorce waiting for a place to happen, truthfully. And after several years of marriage, we were on the brink of divorce. We almost divorced, and God saved our marriage. And that's where our marriage ministry comes from. But in the midst of the conflict, you know, people that live with conflict in their marriages chronically live 4 years less than people who don't. If you have a peaceful marriage, literally it makes you live longer and have fewer diseases. And so this is something that's a big deal. Karen and I have peace in our relationship. We don't fight. You know, we're normal, and we don't have a perfect marriage, but we just have peace in our home. And we've had peace in our home for many years because we understand how to do it. And so I want to talk to you about the four foundations of true and lasting peace in your marriage, because maybe you have some anxiety, maybe you have some stress, maybe you have some frequent conflicts that are keeping you from really having, you know, the intimacy and the type of the atmosphere in the home that you want to have. And so let me talk about four foundations of true and lasting peace in marriage. And the first is prior agreement. If you're going to have peace in your marriage relationship, you have to have agreement beforehand. This is Amos 3:3, and Amos asks a question that's a very important question. Can two walk together unless they are agreed? Okay, that's the question. The answer is absolutely not. And the longest journey in life is marriage. If you're not in agreement and you're walking in marriage and one person's going this way and the other person's going that way, it creates conflict. It creates a lot of conflict. And that's what happened in our relationship. And so every couple enters into marriage, you know, hoping to have a great marriage, hoping to have harmony and peace and all the blessings of marriage. But if you don't have prior agreement in your marriage, it's a pipe dream. And so I started out in ministry. God healed our marriage. We almost divorced. God healed our marriage. And people started coming to us for marriage counseling. A lot of people started coming to us for marriage counseling. Well, we never told anybody we could help them in their marriage. It kind of freaked us out that people would come to us and say, could you help us in our marriage? And so one day the pastor of the church walked up to me in the hall and he said, I want to talk to you. And I said, what about? And he said, well, I want you to come on staff as a marriage counselor. And I said, I don't have any credentials at all in doing that. And he said, well, everybody comes to you for marriage counseling. You might as well do it up here. So I quit our family business and came on staff here at the church 33 years ago. And I did pre-marriage counseling, pre-marriage and marriage counseling. But what I did was I got couples ready to be married. And so they came in. I had lots of couples that, in fact, a lot of the couples that I took through, now they have kids and all that kind of stuff. But 20% of the couples that I took through pre-marriage counseling didn't get married. Because most of the couples and 90% of those that did get married had never had a deep conversation about marriage. We have a resource called The Right One, and this is not for you, but it's for single people. If you have a child or someone you know, and this talks about how to date and marry the right person. This is a small group resource, and this is a book. And we wrote this out of, you know, just our experience and people not knowing how to date. And we teach on dating to explore, not dating to impress. See, a lot of people who date They don't have deep conversations because they're afraid it'll break them up. Exactly. That's why you want to have deep conversations. You want to talk about everything. You want to agree beforehand. You want to have conversations. So when I took couples through premarriage counseling, I had a couple of different things that I used in premarriage counseling. One was called a marriage expectation inventory. And I would take couples and I would ask them just certain questions about their marriage. One of the questions was, how many children are you going to have? I had a couple. The man said 6. The woman said 2. How many of you know that's the problem? And I said, well, how many are you going to have? And he said 6. And she said, not by me, you're not. That couple broke up. That was a deal breaker for him. Thank God they had that conversation before they got married. But most people don't. Is the wife going to work? And I asked one couple that, and the woman said, no. And he said, of course you are. Little issue there. Who manages the money? How much can you spend without your spouse's approval? Okay. Who will you spend the holidays with? I asked that to one couple, and she said, my family. We hate his family. And he said, excuse me? How will you deal with in-law problems? I had one couple that I said, well, he was Catholic and she was Protestant. And I said, whose church are you going to raise your kids in? And he said, oh, mine. And she said, no, I'm not going to your church. They broke up in my office. They had never had a conversation about where they were going to go to church and how they were going to raise their kids and all that. There was another thing that I used called a role concepts analysis. And it asked, it's just trying to find out what you believe about roles in marriage. One question is, who will do the housework? Because the number one reason that couples fight is over housework and over the house itself. Who will mow the yard? Who will discipline the kids? There's one question that I ask on role concepts analysis. Is it okay for a woman to initiate sex? And I had a young man say, no, it's not okay. And I said, get out of my office. You're too stupid to get married. And so, but the majority, if I wouldn't have led those couples through the process of talking about those things, they would have never talked about it. In other words, there's no prior agreement. We're entering into the most important relationship in our lives, and we don't even know if we agree. We have been dating to impress, and we've been afraid to have deep conversations for fear it would split us up. And then you get married and you find out you married someone completely different than you thought you did. And you start having problems. And that's one of the things that Karen and I did. There are three levels of communication in marriage. And this is very, very critical. Three levels. One is proactive communication. Proactive means we're doing it ahead of time. See, when you have a budget, one of the most important things about having a budget financially isn't the numbers on the page. It's a proactive conversation. We're not going to react to money all the time. We're going to sit down and talk about it and take the emotion out of it. It's not saying it's not emotional at all, but when you're proactively talking, it means, you know, before money is an issue next Christmas, let's sit down and talk about Christmas. Before money is an issue, you know, let's sit down and talk about all the different issues so that we can resolve it now. Proactive, it takes the emotion out of it, and we decide beforehand. Now we can walk together. The second type of communication is reactive communication. And this is where the peace leaves the relationship. We're reacting to the kids. We're reacting to work. We're reacting to money. We're reacting to sex. We're reacting to all these things because we haven't talked about these things. The third level is radioactive communication. This is somebody's going to get hurt. And when Karen and I got married, I didn't know about money languages. You know, there are different money languages. And I see money as love. Karen sees money as security. There's no right or wrong way, so there's nothing wrong about it. But Karen likes to save. Karen's a saver. And so I like to save, and I'm conservative financially, but it's easier for me to spend than it is Karen. Well, when we got married, we couldn't talk about money because I thought she was a tightwad, and she thought I was a spendthrift. And I told her, you're a tightwad, Karen. And she said, Jimmy, you're a spendthrift. Boy, I hated it when she said that. Oh. And I said, you know, Karen, you're the kind of a person that's going to die with all your money in a mattress. Nobody's going to like you. And she said, well, at least I'll have a mattress. And so, you know, that wasn't a good conversation. So we fought we couldn't talk about money. And so until one day I heard about the different money languages, and I teach about this in Marriage on the Rock in the session on money. I go into detail on it. But the point being, we could not talk about money. Well, how many of you know you have to talk about money? It's all day, every day that money is happening in your marriage. We had an issue, that dropped into the radioactive category, which meant we couldn't even bring the subject up. And so it was terrible. So let me talk about how to get issues coming out of the radioactive or reactive into the proactive arena. The first thing you have to do is clear out the radioactive issues and make them a priority. You have to sit down, and there's the old saying, how do you eat an elephant? And that is one bite at a time. And if you've been married for a few years and you realize, you know, we have several issues that are radioactive. And if you're in a blended family, it's even easier to have radioactive issues in a blended family. And so if you have radioactive issues, you say, you know something, that's not okay. We're not okay with this. Because we have not agreed, these issues have become very emotional, and they're keeping us from being intimate and having a sense of peace and goodwill between us. And so we are going to resolve these issues. We are not going to let these issues divide us. We are not going to let these issues ruin our marriage. And if we have to go get help outside, we'll do that. Listen, getting counseling is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of wisdom. Teachable people succeed. Unteachable people don't succeed. You guys here are obviously very teachable. But the point being, Karen and I, we'll get help if we need it. We have, as a pastor, as a marriage guy, we've gone to get help. We had an issue with our daughter one time that we couldn't resolve. And we went to someone, they resolved it in 5 minutes. And it had been 5 years and we couldn't resolve it. And so if you need to go get help, go get help. But it's not okay to have these issues in your marriage that you can't agree on, that you don't agree on. And so number one, we are going to get these out. The second thing is stop reacting to issues. Now, Karen and I teach people how to do vision retreats. And if you've ever heard me teach much on marriage, you've heard me talk about vision retreats. At that time, we had a good marriage, but we had disagreement about our children. They were teenagers, about money, and about my schedule. Those were the three issues that we had, you know, kind of tension about. I wouldn't say we fought about it all the time. So we went on our vision retreat, our first vision retreat, and those are the first three things we talked about. And we woke up in the morning, you from the time you wake up until around noon, you just talk and pray, and then the rest of the time you just have fun. And you fight. When you go on a vision retreat, a lot of times you'll fight. And we have a rule about that, and that is all fighting stops at noon, come back to it the next morning. Okay, just decide, okay, we're going to have fun the rest of the day, remember where we were. Okay, and so you just come back and fight. Because you need to fight. If you're going to fight, go ahead and fight. But let me ask you a question. Wouldn't you rather have a good 3 or 4 week fight and live the rest of your life in peace rather than not have that fight and live the rest of your life in anxiety? Wouldn't you? Isn't it just better just go ahead and get it over with? And so what a vision retreat does is it brings every issue to the forefront. And it doesn't ask the question, what do you want and what do I want? It asks the question, what does God want? See, when you have two individual stubborn people at a standoff, it's just a headbutting contest. But when two people surrender themselves to the Lordship of Jesus Christ, everything is blessed. Everything is peace. That's where the peace comes from. And so a vision retreat means every year, we're going to have a vision retreat. Listen, if Karen and I start arguing, we know we need a vision retreat. If something gets between us and we kind of start yay-yay at each other, we say, when do you go have a vision retreat? And when we go have a vision retreat, it resolves it. And I'm not trying to win, and she's not trying to win. We're trying to hear God. And when God speaks, now we're one. We don't have division. We have one vision. And because we have God's vision, He gives the provision. When we went away on our first vision retreat, and we prayed, and we talked, let me say this. Now, I hear God. I mean, I'm a hearer. Karen's a feeler. So when I say you get away and you talk and you hear God, Karen feels, and her feelings are how God speaks to her a lot of times. She has deep convictions. And I'll say to her, well, you know, Karen, I was praying and I feel like the Lord said this. And I don't pull the God said thing on her, like, you better do what I say or Jesus is going to strike you dead. Is that I don't do that. But what I do say is, you know, Karen, I was praying and I thought maybe the Lord said this. And then she'll come back and says, well, I don't feel good about that. But I do feel good about this. And we talk and we pray until we both feel as though that we're both at peace. The Colossians 3 says, let the peace of Christ rule your hearts. God leads us through peace. He's the Prince of Peace. And so when you get peace about something, you talk, it agrees with the Word of God, and you have peace about it, guess what? You're one. You proactively agreed on this, you write it down, and now you have something to hold you accountable. We went and prayed. We had our vision retreat, and the Lord said this about this. And we don't have any argument because we went to Jesus and he solved our argument. Neither of us fought and won. Jesus helped us to resolve our issues. And the other thing I would say about proactive communication is have a regular time every day of sitting face to face and talking. One of the things that healed our marriage was we would put our kids to bed at night. And this is when the Lord healed our marriage and our kids were little. I would come home. We would eat dinner together as a family. We would spend a couple of hours together with our kids. Then we'd put them to bed. I put our kids to bed. I would go in. I had a guitar. I'd play some worship songs. I worshiped with them. I prayed with them. I put the kids to bed. Karen and I had a little area in our bedroom that had a little couch area. And we would pop popcorn and sit there and talk face to face without any distractions. That was before cell phones, thank God. And we didn't have any distractions, no cell phones, nothing like that. And we talked face to face every day. Another thing we did for over 20 years is we walked every morning for an hour and a half when our kids got old enough to be in the house by themselves. We walked every morning for an hour and a half and we talked for 45 minutes and we prayed for 45 minutes. And it was the most incredible thing in our marriage. A lot of people are so busy, they never sit down face to face and talk. And that, in other words, you proactively communicate on your vision retreat, you proactively communicate and you get up to date on all your issues. That's how you stay up to date. And there's another little thing there. And that is, you have to allow your spouse the right to be honest without paying a price. When you have radioactive issues in your marriage, it means if I bring this up, you know, all heck's going to break loose. If I bring this up, it's going to cause a fight. That's how you know that you have radioactive issues in your life. And a lot of times when people come in for counseling and they tell us their issues, we'll say to them something like, well, have you told your spouse? And they say, oh gosh, if I told them, they'd go ballistic. Okay, so here's the way you resolve the issues in your marriage. You go to your spouse and say, I want you to tell me if I'm doing something wrong, and I won't make you pay a price. I may not agree with it, but I'm not going to pout. I'm not going to threaten. I'm not going to stomp away. I'm not going to withdraw from you. I want us to work out our marriage issues, and I realize I have issues. I don't think I have all the issues. And you can smile when you say that. But I know I have issues, and I want to be the best spouse I can be. So I'm not going to be defensive, because defensiveness traps those issues in your marriage. So the number one thing, if we're going to have peace in our relationship, is prior agreement. We have to sit down and talk about important issues and get the radioactive issues out, stop reacting to issues, and make sure we're in front of the curve and we know what God is saying to us in our marriage. Number two element of peace in marriage is purpose, is having God's purpose for our marriage. You know, Rick Warren, his book, The Purpose-Driven Life, the first sentence in the book is, it's not about you. And John Eldridge has a book called Sacred Romance. And he talks about in there about getting trapped in the little story. There's a big story in life and getting trapped in the little story. And a lot of people get trapped in the little story of life. The little story of life is going to work, making money, going to the grocery store, going to the cleaners, filling the car up, you know, taking kids to soccer. That's the little story. The big story is there's a king and a kingdom and an eternity and a call that God has on all of our lives to make a difference before we leave here. That's the bigger story. And see, the question, when you get trapped in the little story, it's just about selfish people trying to get what they want. But when you get into the bigger story, it's a game changer. And see, here's the question. Why did God put you together? See, that's purpose. What is the purpose of you being married? And the purpose of you being married is not the little story stuff. Now, that stuff is important. But there's a bigger issue. An example, when Karen and I got married, I wanted to be a professional golfer. I've played golf all my life. I played golf just about every day at that point. I was a horrible husband, horrible father. But the purpose of my life was to golf. I was not a good father. My heart was not turned toward my children. I was not a good husband. My heart was not turned toward my wife or my home. But I was a golfer. I was a good golfer. And I would go out and golf, and that was the reason I lived. And I was damaging my wife, and I was damaging my children, and I didn't care. And it was the brink of divorce before God got my attention and helped me to understand there was a different reason for my life. See, I didn't know I was Jimmy Evans. I didn't know that my life would touch millions of people. I didn't know I'd be in this room right now. But God did. And maybe the devil did too. And maybe that was the reason he was working so hard to split us up. But when God changed me and changed us, the purpose of our marriage changed. And here's some of the reasons when Karen and I did our vision retreat, here's some of the reasons that we live. One of the first is to raise godly children to serve the Lord and reach the next generation. And we've done that. Both of our children live for the Lord. Our son Brent is the president of marriage today, and I work with him every day. Our daughter is a woman of God, have wonderful grandchildren. Another purpose of our marriage is to be a witness of God's love to reach others for Christ. We want to take as many people to heaven with us as we can. We want our marriage to influence as many people as possible for Jesus. Another reason is to use God's grace to us in the area of marriage and family to help others in need. God saved our marriage. And when God saved our marriage, here's what we said. If you'll help us, we'll help others. And we never knew what that prayer meant. But if you'll help us, let me say something. Nothing is more powerful than a redeemed scar. And a redeemed scar is why all of us are on our way to heaven. And we need to thank Jesus for that. But you might say, I've been a failure in marriage. I mean, we have a bad marriage. I mean, I've had two or three marriages or whatever. You let God take the scars in your marriage and redeem them, and you'll be one of the most powerful marriage ministers on this earth. See, no one can talk to a person like someone who's been there. No one can talk to a drug addict like an ex-drug addict. No one can talk to an alcoholic like an ex-alcoholic. And when I talk about marriage, it's not hollow. I've been there, done that. I've been on the brink of divorce. I was a bad husband. I've lived in a home with no peace in it whatsoever. I understand what it's like to look at a future that's just absolute hell on earth. And so God uses me. And honestly, the reason I believe that God uses me is because if I can do it, anybody can do it. But God can use you. There's a purpose for your marriage. And one of the reasons, I have some friends, and the purpose for their marriage is to resource God's kingdom financially. And they're gifted in business. And they know that the reason that God put them together was to resource the kingdom of God and to resource ministries. God has a purpose for your marriage, but it's not the little story stuff. And if you're trapped in the little story, there's a bigger story. Let me tell you, when I wake up in the morning, I may be going to the grocery store. I may be going to the gas station. I may be folding clothes for Karen. I may be doing something like that. But I don't wake up in the morning to do those things. I wake up in the morning to serve a king and a kingdom and to make an eternal difference in this life. And that elevates everything in your life to a place of peace. Because when you find God's purpose for your life, it's like putting your hand in a glove. You were created in your mother's womb to do what he called you to do. And everything I do today I love. It's why God created me on this earth. But before Karen and I, our marriage was healed, I was trapped in the little story. Partnership is number three, and I'm almost finished here. Marriage is about sharing, and it's about being partners. And let me just make a couple of points here, and that is dominance destroys marriage. Marriage is an equal partnership. And that's why I was saying your spouse should be able to say anything they want to say without paying a price. And we need to be kind to one another. We need to be polite to one another. But we need to give our spouse the right. In other words, we're equal stockholders. In a relationship where there's dominance, one person owns more stock than the other. And one person makes decisions without consulting the other person. Or the other person feels fearful and disrespected in the decision-making in the home. Now I was dominant. I mean, this was my deal. And so I would, you know, just not care about what Karen said. I would just kind of make decisions and bully her if she disagreed with me or whatever. Karen and I make all of our decisions together. I don't make any significant decision in life without Karen. I never bully her. I never badger her. And if she says to me, Jimmy, I don't agree, it's done. It's over. I walk away. I don't pout. Karen has kept me from making 1,000 dumb decisions. She's brilliant. She's wonderful. I'm so grateful that I have her as a wife. I need her in my life. So we're partners. There cannot be dominance, and we share everything. Marriage is about sharing. We share everything. We share our children. We share ministry. We share life. We share our home. We're not existing in two separate parts of the house or just existing, and I have my life and she has her life. We share our lives together, and we're partners in every single thing that we do. So partnership brings a sense of peace. And the final one here is prayer. And this is, let me just read this scripture. And I'm done. This says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Now, he says, don't be anxious for anything. Anxiety is a choice. If you're an anxious person, you made a choice to be anxious because you don't have to be anxious. Be anxious for not one thing, but in every single thing, with prayer and more prayer, let your requests be made known to God with thanksgiving, and the peace of God that passes all comprehension will guard your intellect and your emotions. The word guard there is the Greek word phrureo. It means a military guard that keeps an enemy out. The peace of God that passes all comprehension will guard your mind and heart. Let me say this. Anxiety and stress are the number one killer of marriages. It kills the spirit of your home. It kills the spirit of your relationship. It kills it. Anxiety and stress. It's the number one sex problem today in America is anxiety and stress. And so listen, if you don't pray, you're going to worry. And when you worry, it's going to affect every area of your relationship in a negative way. God didn't design us to live under stress. And by the way, the number one reason for prescribed drugs in America and the number one reason for doctor's office visits is stress and anxiety. So it says, don't be anxious for anything, but in everything with prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace that passes all comprehension will guard you. It will set a military guard so that your marriage is full of peace. Well, Matthew 18, Jesus said, again, I say to you that if two of you agree on earth concerning anything that they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, I am there in their midst. So you're having a problem in your marriage. And remember I said, Karen and I walked for over 20 years praying together for 45 minutes every day. Okay. And that's when our kids were growing up. And we prayed. We would hold hands. And we would be walking up and down streets here in Amarillo. And we would pray for every single thing you can think of. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miracles that God did for us that we look back on right now and just say, what an awesome God that we have. If two on earth will agree is touching anything you'd ask. Now, I was kind of embarrassed to pray with Karen. She always wanted me to pray with her, but I didn't, I was afraid I'd cuss or something. I hadn't been saved very long when she wanted to do it. And I thought, well, I'm not very spiritual and I don't know how to pray and I've never practiced. I don't know what to do. But one day, I began to pray with Karen. It changed everything. The greatest intimacy, by the way, is spiritual intimacy. And one of a woman's deepest sexual needs is for her husband to pray with her. When women are asked, what are your most important sexual needs? They say, I want my husband to pray with me. Because it makes her feel one with you. It makes her feel connected and that God is a part of your relationship. And so I'm saying that peace, part of the paradise that God created Adam and Eve to live in, part of the blessing of it was peace. And when you have peace in your marriage, it's everything. But it doesn't happen by accident. It happens because we agree. We decide we're going to sit down and we're going to agree that we're going to have a purpose. We want God's purpose for our marriage. And that's going to be the most important thing, reason that we're married. We have a partnership that we share everything. We make our decisions together. There's no dominance in the relationship. And we're praying together. This is a spiritual relationship. And we're going to invite God into our problems. Let me say, if you don't pray, you're going to worry. So what you need to do when you wake up tomorrow, sit down and say, what am I worried about? Write down everything you're worried about. That's your prayer list. You know when you've prayed enough? It's when you're not worried about it anymore. When you have peace.
This concludes session one. Please continue with the secret of lasting passion in marriage, the next teaching in this series.